This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Wendy Gillette in New York. Former President Donald Trump was the headliner at a GOP dinner in Columbia, South Carolina. Correspondent Tom Foti reports.
For the second time since his third indictment, ex-President Donald Trump was out campaigning, discussing his second criminal case, the one involving classified documents.
I'm under the Presidential Records Act, which is a big deal.
His lawyers have till Monday afternoon to answer a court move by the special counsel to limit Trump's postings and statements about the election conspiracy matter. Legal analyst Lori Levinson.
He's sending not-so-veiled threats to potential witnesses in this case.
Part of the highly restrictive Texas abortion law is at the center of a legal fight. A judge ruled women with complicated pregnancies would be able to seek abortions in the state, but that was quickly blocked. Reporter Chris Fox explains from Austin.
Just hours after Judge Jessica Mangrum temporarily blocked provisions of the state's near-total abortion ban, the state's provisional attorney general, Angela Colmenero, appealed that decision to the state's all-Republican Supreme Court. The appeal now stays the trial court decision until a full trial.
Temperatures in Phoenix have once again spiked. National Weather Service meteorologist Bob Orvec.
Going forward through a good part of the week, the temperatures are going to still be near or above 110.
Canadian wildfires are still affecting air quality in some states. WCCO-TV reporter Jonah Kaplan from Minneapolis.
More than 5,000 wildfires tearing through Canadian forests, some of which are larger than some U.S. states. That's why we're hurting from this summer of smoke.
And just the impact it does have on our kids. Like, I even noticed they're coughing more at night.
The Writers Guild strike shows no signs of ending soon. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti.
On Friday, in what were the first talks in nearly 100 days between striking writers and the studios, no deal was reached.
There's new research involving the flu and heart health. Here's Scott Maiman.
It's winter in Australia, bringing with it flu season down under. But doctors have now found a direct link between the flu and fatal cardiac arrest.
If you were to come in with a sudden cardiac to hospital, if you've also had influenza infection, there's a good chance that that had something to do with your outcome.
Research cardiologist Timothy Tan, he says the flu increases blood flow, contributing to arterial plaque ruptures that lead to a heart attack, recommending we think now on getting a flu vaccination.
The U.S. women's soccer team has been eliminated from the World Cup after a game that came down to penalty kicks.
Wow. Sweden wins.
Fox Sports with the call. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and max speed with Indeed. Their hiring solution platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
At Grainger.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A new report finds almost three-quarters of young people believe gun violence is a problem in the United States. Joe Ullery reports.
Wyatt Russell with American University says this generation, raised in an era when mass shootings are common, says school safety is a major concern and is associated with negative mental health outcomes.
The average young person knows at least one other person who's been injured or killed by a gun. We've seen an astonishingly high 25% of youth have been in an active shooter lockdown, not a drill, a lockdown.
A study from the Kaiser Family Foundation also found that gun violence was the leading cause of death for kids in 2020 and 2021, the highest rate among large wealthy nations. Opponents of stricter gun laws cite concerns about personal freedom and self-defense. Russell notes the survey found that a young person's access to guns, identification with gun culture, and exposure to media relating to guns correlated with support for male supremacy, belief that the Second Amendment gives individuals the right to overthrow the government, higher levels of racial resentment, and post-traumatic stress disorders.
We're working to develop some inoculation strategies to help young people stop harmful mis- and disinformation, conspiratorial thinking, and supremacist ideologies that can influence gun violence.
Researchers polled a nationally representative sample of more than 4,100 people, ages 14 to 30. I'm Joe Ullery. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. It is Saturday, July 29th, 2023. This is Morning Cannolis. This is our weekly review, our analysis, and our discussion of those very most important news stories, those big events in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you for joining me this morning in that important discussion, that important exchange, which hopefully will also involve you. Coming to you this morning, as always, from the studios of Civic Media in downtown Waukesha, but broadcasting throughout the state of Wisconsin here on the Civic Media stations. We are also, as always this morning, a special program focusing this week on the superseding indictment of the former President Donald Trump and others, always soliciting and encouraging, inviting your comments, your questions at 844-967-2789, your observations on this very most important topic of this past week and also others, which I will describe in just a moment or so, in addition to taking your phone calls at that number, 844-967-2789. You can also go online, and we are delighted for the past several broadcasts, including this one, to be soliciting and accepting your thoughts, your comments, your questions by text. All you need to do is to go onto the new Civic Media app, pull up your particular station on that app, wherever you're listening from, and then call or text us through the access of that app. In addition, this morning, I want to indicate that we're just in the final days here at Civic Media of a major community outreach initiative, a wonderful initiative that promotes health and safety and security and goodwill and good things in our community, and that's the Civic Media Civic Pints Initiative, the initiative we talked about before on this broadcast and other broadcasts of Civic Media, focusing upon encouraging you to give blood to ensure, again, the health and the safety, the well-being of our fellow citizens here in Wisconsin and throughout the United States of America. If you give blood and you send to us a selfie or some other indication, some other confirmation that, in fact, you have done that, upload that to the URL, we will enter you to win some Brewers tickets, some State Fair tickets, some Civic Media merchandise, all sorts of interesting things that will come of that to thank you for participating with all of us in Civic Pints this month of July coming to an end, but not, of course, coming to an end of the importance of giving blood throughout the year to ensure that our community is safe, secure, and healthy. Encourage you to participate that in that as well. As I indicated this morning, we have a special broadcast. This is our 57th broadcast since going on the air a little bit more than a year ago from right now. You may recall way back in June, just last month, we spent virtually the entire broadcast talking about this major indictment that was issued by the U.S. Department of Justice, Jack Smith, the special counsel's office, under the auspices of the attorney general, his name is Merrick Garland, charging the former defendant and one other person, a fellow named Walt Nauta, who was his personal guide, his personal attendant, his personal aide there at Mar-a-Lago and other places around the United States of America, charging them with violations related to his acquisition, his retention, his movement, and his use, it turns out now, of some of those documents that he improperly took from the White House at the time of his departure in January of 2021. Requests made for many, many months to return those documents, and ultimately resulting in a search warrant about a year or so ago right now. And then in June of this year, a major indictment charging him with violations of the Espionage Act and other offenses against the people, the nation of the United States of America in connection with his improper retention of classified and other documents to which he did not have proper claim. We're going to talk today about what just happened this past week, announced late Thursday, a superseding indictment, same kinds of things coming out of the same subject matter, that is the documents issue at Mar-a-Lago, and another location called Bedminster, New Jersey. We've talked about that before as well. We are going to spend some time, principally the entire first hour, maybe even more, depending upon your questions, your thoughts, your comments, your observations, talking about specifically what that superseding indictment is, what that means, where it comes from, and then talking about its specific content. It is, as before, what we call a talking indictment, which means that, yes, at the end of the indictment, there are portions of it that do, in fact, describe and what we'll describe as legalese, those specific things that are the execution elements, if you will. But it's a talking indictment, and so you can read through the first portions of it and get an understanding of exactly what it is that the grand jury has found based upon the evidence presented to it. A superseding indictment returned this past week, changing, not significantly in terms of the focus of the indictment, but adding more information about the way in which our former president allegedly, and yes, we hasten to add, as we always do, that anyone charged with an offense conduct in here in the United States of America, federally, in the state system, is presumed innocent until proven guilty. That always attends you until that time, if ever, as a jury comes back and finds beyond a reasonable doubt that you as a defendant, the defendant himself, herself, itself, is guilty, again, beyond a reasonable doubt, or there's a plea and a judge enters that finding based upon the evidence presented during the course of the case. A presumption of innocence, that's in our Constitution. It attends everyone, until that formal adjudication of guilt is entered by a court, followed typically by a jury, but not always. And that attends the president as well, and attends other people now included in this superseding indictment. We're going to spend some time again, principally this first hour, second hour, talking specifically, more than just the headlines, about what that particular indictment says. We're going to go through the talking portions, the narrative descriptions of what happened, and what is new in this superseding indictment that was not a part of the indictment that we talked about in early June, again, pending in South Florida. This entire matter, as we know, scheduled by the presiding judge. Her name is Eileen Cannon. She is the district court judge in South Florida. She has scheduled a trial on this entire package of things, all of these charges, for May 24th of next year, 2024. She scheduled that after a hearing among the parties, but before the return of this recent indictment that, yes, adds more charges and adds at least one new defendant to the case, changes somewhat the geography of the case, and may in fact prompt this new defendant through counsel to ask for yet another postponement in the trial date. An awful lot of things related to the pendency of the trial itself, the charges pending right now. We're still anticipating motions to dismiss, motions to suppress, motions challenging the very legitimacy of the indictment itself, certainly the superseding indictment as well. All of that still coming in the federal district court before Judge Eileen Cannon. Lots and lots of things to do, not only in the wake of that first indictment in June, but also now this superseding indictment that happened just 48 hours ago. Also, again, coming out of South Florida, a grand jury sitting in that setting. And let me begin with that principal point, which we have talked about before. A little bit of civics once again this morning. What is a grand jury? A grand jury, again, a private proceeding. We do not know the names of those people. Typically in the federal system, 26 people gathered together, selected by a court, a magistrate judge, sometimes a district court judge. They are from all sectors of our community. They're bankers, they're teachers, they're masons, they're healthcare providers. They can be all sorts of folks. They can be broadcasters, educators, all kinds of people out there who are called in to determine whether there's a basis, whether there's probable cause to find that the people, the entities that they are investigating, and yes, it's their investigation, It is a grand jury investigation where there is probable cause to determine to find in the end that an indictment charges, federal charges, and then sometimes state charges. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. State grand juries pending right now, at least we know in Georgia as well, related to January 6th. Another unrelated grand jury pending, standing right now in Washington, D.C., again related to J6. That will probably be the subject of more discussion and more indictments in the future. This particular grand jury, again, in South Florida, convened how? By a court. Very important point. Grand juries, contrary to some of the commentary out there, even some of the well-meaning media commentary, are not branches of the U.S. Department of Justice. They're not a part of the executive branch. They're a part of the judicial branch. It's a grand jury, a petit jury in a trial setting. That's a part of the court system, not owned, not under the auspices of the executive branch. A grand jury, including the grand jury that returned this superseding indictment, is a part of the judicial branch, convened again by a judge, by a magistrate judge, to bring them together, 26 people, to work in private to determine whether or not there is sufficient evidence to return charges. And yes, they do it based upon subpoenas that they can issue, subpoenas for the testimony of people coming before them to provide them with oral testimony about what happened, what didn't happen. Also, lots of documents that they can secure, again, through grand jury subpoenas. We'll talk about that in just a few moments as well. And in the end, the Department of Justice, through assistant U.S. attorneys, and yes, Jack Smith, who is the special counsel here, his staff as well, assisting them undeniably, working through the administrative portions of enforcing those subpoenas, getting those witnesses to appear. But it's the grand jury itself that does the review of all this information and determines in the end whether there is a sufficient probable cause to return an indictment. And yet, once again, as I've said in the past, my strong view, having spent 30 years practicing in front of grand juries, is they are not a rubber stamp. You happen to be listening to someone who is a prosecutor on at least two different occasions during my time as an assistant U.S. attorney. A federal prosecutor had grand juries come back to me and say, Mr. Santel, we do not concur. We have looked at the evidence presented in front of us, and we do not agree with your assessment that there is a basis, a probable cause that these particular defendants have engaged in federal offenses. And you know what? Although I disagreed with them, obviously would not have presented that to them, absent my view, the view of my boss at that time, the U.S. attorneys for whom I worked, that there was a sufficient basis to indict. The reality is, and the important point is, it's the grand jury's decision. It's not the decision of the prosecutor. It's not the decision, in the end, of the U.S. Department of Justice. It is the decision of those grand jurors. They make the finding, and that's what happened again this past week in adding additional charges, in adding additional defendant to this particular case. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk with specificity about what that grand jury, that superseding grand jury indictment says, what it doesn't say. Stay with us for that discussion, that presentation about this talking indictment that once again animates the rule of law in America and dictates in many ways the kinds of cases that are going to be pending in the federal district court in 2024 and beyond.
One call, the Civic Media Network of stations can deliver your business's message to the entire state of Wisconsin.
Or your hometown.
Marketing plans that work for your business. One call can do it all. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try.
try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' Hot Cheetos Chicken on a Stick? Deep-fried Old Fashioned? Or Pino Pretzel Popper Brat? The answer's coming up. The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Allis. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long, close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year? It was the Pino Pretzel Popper Brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Pursuing the truth wherever it may lead. The Todd Alba Show, weekday afternoons from 1 till 3. Join the conversation. Get involved. The Todd Alba Show on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Flowers, vegetables, and crab apples, some of the first Marathon County Fair attractions, and showed us proof those crops could grow there. Started in 1868 by the Agricultural Society, the Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau began as a place to buy and sell those types of goods. Today, it's considered one of the best in the state, featuring displays, demos, and big-name entertainment included with the price of your ticket. The Wisconsin Valley Fair runs August 1st to the 6th in Wausau. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Ball.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
We are back here at Morning Cannolis. It is Saturday, July 29th, a special broadcast here again through the auspices of Civic Media, but also taking your phone calls, your texts as well through the Civic Media online app. That phone number is 844-967-2789. Delighted to hear from you this morning, as always, spending most of this hour, perhaps even into the second hour, depending upon your observations, your questions, your comments on this major new development in a criminal prosecution brought by the U.S. Department of Justice. This is a federal prosecution. This is not a state prosecution, brought by the U.S. Department of Justice in the executive branch of the federal government. Federal prosecutors, Thursday, just 2 days ago, adding some new major accusations to a previously filed indictment that we talked about right here on this program, charging the former president, his name Donald Trump, with mishandling classified documents after he left office. We know about that. That was the predicate of the previous indictment. Presenting evidence that he told a property management at Mar-a-Lago, which is his resort and sometimes residence, his private club, his residence in Florida there, that he wanted security camera footage there to be deleted. That's the headline. And that is why this new accusation, this set of accusations, is so significant. It's all about, once again, obstruction of justice, an attempt to keep the investigators from finding out what really happened. And again, let's talk a little bit more about the predicates for this. We're going to spend some time chatting about what this all means. Let's start with the word superseding. Superseding, what does that mean? S-U-P-E-R-S-E-D-I-N-G, the second major civics point of the morning. It means what it means in commonplace language. You may or may not use that word in your own life and own business and your own relationships with your family and friends. It basically means taking the place of a thing that was previously in place, a substitute. It supplants the thing that was there before. It's a substitute for what happened before. And indeed, the superseding indictment that we have now in front of us, returned by the grand jury in South Florida just 2 days ago, incorporates all of the previous charges. It's a brand new indictment, but it's also duplicative of, it repeats all the previous charges and adds more. It adds more things in terms of an additional defendant, and also through this speaking language of this superseding, this supplanting indictment, gives us even more indication of what it was that Donald Trump and at least two other people now were doing with respect to these documents, and yes, indeed, an attempt to obstruct justice in the very, very conduct, the response to the conduct of the investigation being conducted by the U.S. Department of Justice. A superseding indictment, it is now the document upon which this trial will proceed. And again, incorporating all the previous charges and allegations that we talked about in June and some new things as well. Let's get right to that. Again, focusing on those Mar-a-Lago documents, the new accusations revealed in this indictment, naming additional defendant, okay? His name is Carlos De Oliveira. De Oliveira, all right? And so we've got actually a third person involved in these particular charges. We know the first one, his name is Donald Trump. We know the second one. We saw him in the previous indictment. His charges remain in the superseding indictment. His name is Walter or Walt Nauta, N-A-U-T-A, is the personal aide, the personal assistant to the former president. And now we have this third person. He's the property manager, sometimes called the maintenance supervisor at Mar-a-Lago. He is now also named as a third defendant. He is now in criminal jeopardy by virtue of the charges in the superseding indictment. Carlos de Oliveira, we're going to talk a lot about him this morning. And then there's a fourth person that's also a part of this indictment, identified in the indictment just as employee number four. But we know who that is. We know who that is by virtue of other discovery, other information provided by the media. And his name is Yusil, Y-U-S-C-I-L, Taveras, T-A-V-E-R-E-S. Yusil Taveras, identified again as employee number four. And what is his role? He's the IT specialist. He's the one who does all the information technology there at Mar-a-Lago. You'll see in just a few moments why it is Yusil Taveras is also so critical now to these new charges in this superseding indictment. He is the fourth player, the fourth person you're going to hear a lot about this morning. There are others who are also a part of this. They're identified as employees of the Trump Organization, as employees number three and number five. We'll talk about them as well. The revised indictment, as I said, adds three serious charges against the former president: attempting to alter, destroy, mutilate, or conceal evidence. That's one of the new charges. Inducing someone else to do so. And that's where, again, Carlos de Oliveira and even Yusil Taveras come into play. And a new count under the Espionage Act related to a classified national security document that he showed to visitors at his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey. Remember this? Also a part of the previous indictment. We've got more information now in the superseding indictment about the nature of that document in New Jersey, a top secret document. There was a war plan that he showed to other people in that setting. We'll get to that. Also now a part of this superseding indictment returned just a couple of days or so ago. All of this, again, landing from the grand jury this week before the people of America and pending in the federal district court in South Florida. Let's begin with that discussion. We're going to jump right into page 27 of this superseding indictment, a whole new set of charges, a whole new portion of this. Let's go through this. It is understandable. It tells this compelling story about the obstruction of justice engaged in by our former president, by Walt Nauta, and again, this new defendant, Carlos de Oliveira, involving other people. Here we go. June 3rd of 2022, a little bit over a year ago, FBI agents says we're at Mar-a-Lago, at the Mar-a-Lago Club. Why were they there? They were to collect documents with classification markings that the Trump attorneys had identified. Remember, this is a part of the request from NARA, from the National Archives for Materials, and also then from the Department of Justice. The attorneys for Donald Trump said, sure, we've got those documents. Come down here and get those documents. June 3rd, 2022. Here's the lead into the next portion. While they were there, they observed surveillance cameras located in a storage room. The FBI identifies those surveillance cameras, and that's how we get into the next portion of this story, which we are going to pursue right after this break, involving, again, the attempt to delete security camera footage from the Mar-a-Lago location. Stay with us for that important discussion.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Lawyers for former President Donald Trump have until 5 p.m. tomorrow to respond to a request by special counsel Jack Smith for a federal judge to impose a protective order after Trump posted a threatening message on social media. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
He's sending not-so-veiled threats to potential witnesses in this case.
A judge ruled part of the Texas abortion law is too restrictive, but it was quickly blocked. Reporter Chris Fox.
13 Texas women sued the state when doctors refused to perform the procedure under the medical emergency exemption for fear they could receive jail time.
Parts of the Midwest are under the threat of possible severe weather today. National Weather Service meteorologist Bob Orovec.
Potent systems are moving across those areas. They have been responsible for some heavy rain. We do anticipate potential for some fairly significant rain spreading out of the Dakotas, getting into Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois.
CBS News Brief. I'm Wendy Gillette.
Does your financial strategy include your hopes and dreams? What matters most to you? For over 100 years, Thrivent has helped clients like you find financial solutions for life's important goals. Explore a full range of options, from financial advice and investments to insurance, banking, and generosity programs. To have a heart-to-heart about your finances, contact Mandy Roberts, who you may recognize as Mandy Wright. Call her at 715-470-1303. 715-470-1303. Mandy Roberts proudly serves the central Wisconsin area. For more details, visit thrivent.com/disclosure.
She's the newest of 7 elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a long-time tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr. Flowers, vegetables, and crab apples, some of the first Marathon County Fair attractions, and showed us proof those crops could grow there. Started in 1868 by the Agricultural Society, the Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau began as a place to buy and sell those types of goods. Today, it's considered one of the best in the state, featuring displays, demos, and big-name entertainment included with the price of your ticket. The Wisconsin Valley Fair runs August 1st to the 6th in Wausau. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
The Joint Finance Committee, again in the middle of the night, took that out and said, well, hey, you have all this money coming from the federal government. Why don't you use that to create this program? Well, guess what? We proved it worked. Wages went up $2 an hour. There actually are a couple extra childcare businesses open now than there were about a year ago, and that's going to stop. Just Monday, we lost two.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
When you want something so badly, what you're able to justify and rationalize and get over. So I would say there's not a non-zero chance.
But what record would she run on? Foxconn?
Well, what did she run on for governor? Probably the same thing.
I just remember her warning about people will be marrying coffee tables once gay marriage is allowed. So I'd like her to run just so I can ask her how many of those weddings she's been to.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And apparently, Maggie Dawn, Fig Newton lover of the Maggie Dawn Show.
I was so offended, Jane. You know how much I love and admire you. You're like my freaking radio hero. And then to hear you bash my Newton.
It's still bad.
You want the cakey part cakey. You want the jammy part jammy. That is like bringing me back.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
We are back talking this morning principally, if not exclusively, about this major development in the Mar-a-Lago investigation, the Mar-a-Lago prosecution against our former president, and now two other people, an additional defendant named in this superseding indictment just 2 days ago. We're talking about what exactly this superseding indictment says. What do they do to qualify, to justify these charges, again, brought by a grand jury in South Florida right before the break, talking about the fact that the story here, although it preceded much of this, begins in June when agents are down there, FBI agents, upon the invitation of the attorneys for the former president, invited down there to pick up the documents. Attorneys telling the FBI, yes, we've got documents, come down here and take a look at them. And while the agents are there. According to the very first statement in this new section in the superseding indictment, they look around, they say, you know what? There's a surveillance camera near the storage room. And why is that important? Well, prosecutors and investigators have been long understanding and trying to get a feel for what exactly was going on with these boxes. As we know from the previous indictment, lots of the photographs, are they being moved around? Who's got access to them? What is going on with respect to those documents? And so a surveillance camera right outside the very storage room in which they're being kept, plainly recording, perhaps, relevant information. And sure enough, 3 weeks later, after the FBI agents go back to Washington, take a look at all these documents, obviously get in touch almost immediately, certainly, with the U.S. Department of Justice attorneys there handling this case and say, you know what? We saw this surveillance camera. We should make a request for the surveillance videos, right? And so what happens about 3 weeks after their visit, sure enough, the Department of Justice emails an attorney for Donald Trump with a request, a draft version of a grand jury subpoena requiring the production of those security camera tapes, the footage from the Mar-a-Lago Club, including footage from the cameras on ground floor basement, where that storage location was venue there, the storage room on the ground floor. June 23, 1 day after that initial request is made from the Department of Justice to Donald Trump's attorneys, what happens? We know on June 23rd, Donald Trump calls someone named Carlos de Oliveira. Carlos de Oliveira, and they spoke for 24 minutes, okay? Presumably what happens here is the attorneys for Donald Trump call Donald Trump and say, you know what? The Department of Justice, those FBI folks, and the prosecutors are looking for those tapes. We need to produce them. We hope that's what the attorneys said. And Donald Trump, after hanging up the phone call, after concluding the conversation, what does he do? He calls the person, his property management, his maintenance supervisor at Mar-a-Lago, should have told him, you know what? You got to make certain that all those tapes are preserved. That's what the call should have been about. Presumably, based upon what happens afterwards, just the opposite happens. Donald Trump calls this fellow named De Oliveira, again, his property manager there, his maintenance supervisor, and they speak for 24 minutes. The grand jury indictment does not tell us exactly what is said, but we can figure that out based upon what happens next. That's June 23rd, one day after the request is made. June 24th, Department of Justice emails the attorney for Donald Trump with the final version of the grand jury subpoena. What does it request? It requests the production of any and all surveillance records, videos, images, photographs, and or CCTV from internal cameras at certain locations at Mar-a-Lago, including, once again, that ground floor basement location. It includes a request that any of those surveillance tapes that were recorded from when? January 10th of 2022 to June 24th of 2022, the very date of that request. That information, that span of information, important for reasons I'll talk about in just a moment. And here we go. And here is where the conspiracy hasn't already begun by that conversation between Donald Trump and this De Oliveira fellow, now a defendant in this case, is pursued. The same day, June 24th, 1:25 in the afternoon, the attorney speaks again with Donald Trump by phone regarding that security request, the request for the security camera footage at that time. That afternoon, Walt Nauta, again the personal aide for Donald Trump, receives a text message from another Trump employee. This other Trump employee says, hey, the former president, Donald Trump, wants to see you, Mr. Nauta. And less than 2 hours after that request is made to Mr. Nauta, again, already a defendant, the personal aide to the defendant, he is scheduled to travel with Donald Trump to Illinois the next day, but based upon that request, Nauta changes his travel schedule and begins to make arrangements to go where? To Palm Beach, Florida instead. Something about what happened in those previous days prompts Nauta to say, you know what, I'm not going with the former president to Illinois as scheduled. I need to go back to South Florida to do something there. And what does he do? We know from the following paragraphs. He provides some inconsistent explanations about why suddenly he changes his plans. And all of this, again, relevant to what's going on here. It suggests, once again, an immediate need after this request is made for the production of these materials to work on, obviously, the purpose of this was to delete those camera footage items and to obstruct justice. What happens? Nauta provides these inconsistent statements, again, according to the superseding indictment, to various colleagues, kind of trying to hide what he's doing here. About his sudden travel change, he's going to Florida all of a sudden. On June 24th, late in the evening, mid-evening or so, he texts one person that he would not be traveling with Donald Trump to Illinois, but rather he's got a family emergency, and he would be going again to South Florida. He uses the shushing emoji. Remember, this is the one that has the emoji with the lips kind of pursed and the face with the finger up against the lips. The shushing emoji to say, basically, quiet about this. 9:48 that night. He texts a Secret Service agent that likewise he has to check in a family member in Florida. That's the reason he's going, he says. And after he arrives in Florida on June 25th, he tells that Secret Service agent that he is now in Florida working. All right, a change in sudden plans after he is engaged with the former president. Got to go down there to do something. And about the same time on June 24th that Nauta is making his travel plans to go to Florida, Nauta and, again, this new defendant named D. Oliveira contacted another player in this, and that is the director of information technology, already identified him. We know who he is. His name is Yusile Taveras, T-A-V-E-R-A-S, Yusile Taveras. He's identified again in the indictment as employee number 4. It's significant that he's identified that way. Here's a little bit of insight on that. Almost certainly, again, Yusile Taveras not named as a defendant in the superseding indictment. Mr. Taveras is almost certainly a cooperating witness with the government. He's identified as the employee there. The fact that he's not indicted, the fact that he's identified as he is, indicates he is working with the grand jury on this investigation, probably provided testimony before that grand jury about what follows next. And sure enough, what do we know about the exchange between Nauta and D. Oliveira again on June 24th? This is 2 days after all of this request is being made about these videotapes from the surveillance cameras there. 5:02, Nauta sends a message to Taveras asking, hey, bro, you around this weekend? And about 5 o'clock, shortly after that, Nauta again texts D. Oliveira saying, hey, brother, you working today? And ultimately, D. Oliveira gets back and says, yes, I just left. Then calls D. Oliveira, and they spoke for about 2 minutes, okay? We don't know exactly the content of that, but we do know that Taveras, after that, texts a response to Nauta, says, I am local, entertaining some family here that came to visit. What's up? What's going on? The IT guy says. And Nauta responds, is, okay, cool, no biggie, just wanted to see if you were around. Enjoy, bro. And again, all this is happening on June 24th. At about 7 o'clock that night, D. Oliveira, again, who is this property manager, texts Yusile Taveras and says, hey, buddy, how are you? Walter, meaning Walt Nauta, called me early today saying he was trying to get in touch with you. I guess he's going to come down tomorrow. I guess he needs you for something. And again, this Yusile Taveras, Trump employee number 4, says he reached out but didn't say what he wanted to do. I told him, Taveras says, I was local, entertaining some family that came in from New York City this weekend. He told me, no worries. Again, all this setting up what's about to happen. About 6:58 that night, again, Trump employee number 4, we know again that's Mr. Taveras, texts Nauta, says, bro, if you need me, I can get away for a few, just let me know. Nauta responds, sounds good, thank you. And then this goes forward. Saturday, January 25th, the next day, Nauta, again, the fellow who's the personal aide to Donald Trump, already indicted in this matter, travels from Bedminster, New Jersey, okay? Again, keep that in mind because we're going to get back to Bedminster in just a few moments. Travels from Bedminster to Florida, and prior to Nauta's trip, De Oliveira told a valet at the Mar-a-Lago club there that Nauta is coming down. Lets him know that, yes, indeed, Nauta, the personal aide to the president, is coming down. Changing plans, coming down to Florida. De Oliveira, again, this newly named defendant, asked Trump employee number 5, yet another employee here, someone else in the mix here, not to tell anyone. Don't tell anybody that Walt Nauta is coming down because Walt Nauta wants the whole thing to remain secret. Nobody's supposed to know about any of this going on. De Oliveira also told this additional Trump employee that Nauta wanted De Oliveira to talk to this Trump employee number 4, and here we go, again, Yusile Taveras,
to see how long the camera footage was stored. How long does this video stuff remain in place? We want to talk to the IT guy. Is this camera stuff still in place? So what happens next? Okay, shortly after arriving in Palm Beach, evening of June 25th, Nauta goes to the Mar-a-Lago Club. He finally shows up after a change in plans, all these arrangements made, and he meets with Oliveira, again, this newly named defendant. Oliveira, once again, the property management there, the maintenance supervisor. And here we go, the Mar-a-Lago Club. The two of them go to the security guard booth where the surveillance video is displayed on monitors. Okay, they go there. They begin to take a look at how this all looks, right? And here's some of the most important, compelling language in this superseding indictment. The two of them walk with a flashlight through the tunnel where the storage room was located and observed and pointed out various security cameras, right? They're getting a sense of what this all looks like technologically. And then there is more. Monday, June 27th, about 9:48 or so in the morning, De Oliveira, again, this newly named defendant, walks to the IT office where Trump employee number four, again, that's Yusil Tavares, the IT specialist, was working with another employee in the IT department. And here we go once again. De Oliveira requested that Tavares step away from the office. Leave the office with me, if he says, if you will, so that De Oliveira and Tavares could talk. All right? Can we talk privately, basically? And at about 9:50 or so that morning, again, as Tavares and De Oliveira left that IT office together and walked through the basement tunnel. All this taking place once again at the Trump location there in Mar-a-Lago. De Oliveira tells Tavares that what's going on here, a conversation that follows, but this happens in a small room known as an audio closet near the white and gold ballroom. All right, they go to an audio closet in this location again, plainly in an attempt not to let people know what they're doing. Once inside the audio closet, De Oliveira, the newly named defendant, and Trump employee number four, the IT specialist, Tavares, had the following exchange. And again, very critical. This will be a part of the trial presentation. De Oliveira tells Tavares their conversation should remain just between the two of them. Don't tell anybody else what we're about to talk about, okay? De Oliveira then asks Tavares how many days the server retained footage. How long does this tape remain in place? And Tavares says he believed it was about 45 days, okay? All this, again, coming from the charges in the superseding indictment. De Oliveira then tells Tavares that the boss wanted the server deleted. De Oliveira, again, the newly named defendant, along with Donald Trump, along with Walt Nauta, tells Tavares, the boss, and that means Donald Trump wants the server deleted. That's obstruction of justice, especially after you know that investigators want that information. The Trump employee number four, Tavares, responds that he would not know how to do that. He says, I don't know how to do that. He's the I2 guy. And then goes on to say, very tellingly, he did not believe that he would have the right to do that. He says, you know what? I don't know how to do that. And beyond that, I don't think I've got the right to do that. And tells De Oliveira that he would have to reach out to another employee who was a supervisor of security and to get all of that done. When we come back, more about that conversation as we talk more about these talking points, this talking indictment returned about obstruction of justice related to the Trump Mar-a-Lago documents. Stay with us for that important discussion.
Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' Hot Cheetos, chicken on a stick, deep-fried old-fashioned, or Pino Pretzel Popper Brat? The answer's coming up.
The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Allis. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long, close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year? It was the Pino Pretzel Popper Brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr. Flowers, vegetables, and crab apples, some of the first Marathon County Fair attractions, and showed us proof those crops could grow there. Started in 1868 by the Agricultural Society, the Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau began as a place to buy and sell those types of goods. Today, it's considered one of the best in the state, featuring displays, demos, and big-name entertainment included with the price of your ticket. The Wisconsin Valley Fair runs August 1st to the 6th in Wausau. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bar.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
We are back. We're talking this morning about a talking indictment, the superseding indictment against the former president and two others, Walt Nauta, his personal aide, and again, a new defendant in this matter named De Oliveira, who is the property management, the maintenance supervisor at the location, also involving this IT specialist, whose name is Yusil Tavares. And right before the break, talking about this very clandestine conversation taking place on June 27th of last year, taking place again in an audio closet near the White and Gold Ballroom. De Oliveira, again, who is one of the additional Trump employees there, having this conversation with the IT specialist Tavares, telling him that their conversation should remain between the two of them. De Oliveira asking the IT specialist how many days it would take before the server either deletes or how long is the footage retained. And Tavares says he believes it's about 45 days. And again, that prompts De Oliveira again, who is there plainly on behalf of Nauta, plainly on behalf of the president, to say that the boss wants the server deleted. We need to get rid of this evidence. Why? The Department of Justice is asking about it. That is obstruction of justice. Again, Tavares responds, he doesn't know how to do that, which is interesting as the IT guy there didn't believe he would have the right to do that, which is significant in establishing his own sensibility, probably, not only as an IT specialist, but probably understanding that something odd is going on here and says, I got to talk to somebody else. Supervisor of security, how to do that. And De Oliveira then insists to Trump employee number four again, who is Tavares, that the boss wants the server deleted. And he looks at him and he says, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? The boss wants this to happen, and you don't know how to do it, basically. 10:14 that morning, De Oliveira then texts Nauta, who's again had this conversation with Tavares, still in Florida, and he says, hey, buddy, are you working today? And De Oliveira then called Nauta about 10:15 or so a minute later, and they spoke for about 1 minute. Presumably, what is that about? Presumably about the conversation that De Oliveira and Tavares had just had about deleting, getting rid of this evidence from the Mar-a-Lago location. And again, more information coming up right after that. Later that same day, Nauta, again, Walt Nauta, a part of the indictment already, texts Oliveira, again, who was at the Mar-a-Lago Club, and says, on my way to you, I'm coming to talk to you, okay? They're not going to have this conversation by phone, not no text here. Between 1:31 and 1:50 on that day, De Oliveira walked through the bushes on the northern edge of the Mar-a-Lago Club property. They're walking through bushes to meet with Nauta on the adjacent property. They're walking through bushes, the property, to meet on some adjacent property, and then walked back to the IT office that he had visited that very morning. and then walked again through the bushes on the northern edge of the Mar-a-Lago Club to meet with Nauta on the adjacent property, walking back and forth through bushes that are apparently on the border of the Mar-a-Lago property to meet with Nauta, presumably to talk with him about what they're going to do in the wake of the conversation with the IT guy, Tavares, not indicted, plainly cooperating with the government. What are we going to do about this request from the boss, Donald Trump, to get rid of all of this evidence? At 3:55, Trump calls to Oliveira, and they speak for about 3.5 minutes. Fascinating, right? And that's where the new portion of the indictment concludes. A couple of observations about that. What you've just heard, what the indictment describes there, is a conspiracy to obstruct justice. That is destroying evidence, and that's the reason why, in addition to Donald Trump, additional count there for him, also for Nauta, and now also this D. Oliveira fellow, the property manager at the site, also involved now in this conspiracy to destroy evidence. That's what you just heard based upon the indictment, the new superseding indictment there, also indicating very strongly that Yusiel Tavares, the IT specialist there, almost certainly providing this information to the grand jury. That's how it ends up in this superseding indictment. Compelling information. A lot of people have noticed, too, that this last portion in which it's plain that you've got this conversation between D. Oliveira and Nauta, again, all defendants, taking place again. They're walking through bushes going to an adjacent property so that presumably no one can see them together. An awful lot of people are speculating upon what that's all about. Engage in some kind of activity immediately off of the Mar-a-Lago activity that somehow couldn't come closer to the property itself to transact. It's either that he didn't want to be recorded having visited Mar-a-Lago that day, that's Nauta, or that he's now very aware of that the federal government is interested in this and was not eager to be observed in any way being there. What is that? That's consciousness of guilt. That's consciousness of guilt that you know you're doing something wrong. And you're hiding your very activity that you've been requested to do by the former president, which is to destroy that information. How long does it last? Can we get rid of it? That, too. Consciousness of guilt. That's why this is so important, not only in terms of these additional charges, but also further supporting this indictment that Donald Trump knew what he was doing, gets this information from his attorney, and his response is to see if he can destroy evidence that the government wants, has requested days earlier. That is compelling, hugely, hugely troubling, and yes, it's criminal conduct. Again, hasten to add, it's charged. It has not been found, but with this much specificity and this much certainty, also certainly corroborated by Jack Smith's other attorneys there, other information presented compellingly to a grand jury that looks at this and says, yes, we find probable cause that all of this happened. Compelling information. Now Donald Trump facing 40 counts based upon all this in the superseding indictment. We're going to talk about more of that, but before we do so, we've got a caller. Gary, you've been waiting online for a while. Glad to have you with us this morning. Your observation or comment about our subject matter this morning.
Well, you can imagine where I'm going to come from. I'm fair, okay?
Yes.
I listen to CNN. I listen to you guys. I listen to Matt Flynn. I listen to Hannity, okay? So I hear both sides. It's like you go into court and you're going to defend yourself, but the only jury is going to hear is from the prosecutor. Now, does that sound fair to you, Jim?
And I'm going to answer that question directly. The answer is this. It's a part of the process. Here's the civics point, Gary. A grand jury indictment is the charges. And as I've said at least two or three times this morning, they're the allegations. Why do we have a trial? When you go into trial, that's where this will be presented. And yes, indeed, absolutely. Does Donald Trump and the other defendants now named, will they have an opportunity to defend this case? Yes, they will. What we're doing this morning is describing what a grand jury determined based upon the evidence presented to it. That day in trial is coming. Your point is entirely well taken. And it is fair because it is a part of the system. And it is a part of our system, which has been in place for 240 years. When we come back after the top of the hour, we're going to talk about additional things in this grand jury indictment. Again, going to trial in May of next year or beyond. Stay with us for more of this on Morning Cannolis.
One call can do it all. Your business's message can be broadcast across the entire state of Wisconsin through the Civic Media Network of stations, or we can focus the campaign in your hometown. We have the flexibility. You have the control. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories.
Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media.